G'day, it's Gus Warland here. Thanks for downloading the Dead Set Legends podcast. We really appreciate it. And if you haven't downloaded the Listener app, where you can find so many other really cool podcasts, please do that. And please tell all your friends about it as well. And just hit that subscribe button underneath. The show is all about entertainment, all about sport. It's myself hosting it with Jude Bolton, who's a two-time AFL Premiership winner, and also Wendell Saylor, a dual international and a guy that is not short on confidence. Lots of fun. So much to talk about, boys. I know we're in lockdown here in Sydney, but perfect timing in terms of what's been happening over there in Tokyo. And it's been a magic...
17 gold.
Magic games for us. It's been absolutely incredible. And a couple of bronze in the track and field after what we've done in teams, in the sailing, of course, the first week, Wendell, when we were... It's so good in the pool.
Yeah, it is so good in the pool, but sometimes you can have too much Olympics. So for me...
What do you mean?
I like Olympics, but it's just so repetitive. And I know it's only a couple of weeks, but...
What do you mean? It's 2 weeks every 4 years.
I know, but it's just like it's in your face. Everyone's jumping on the bandwagon. So I've been watching and I'm proud of the Aussies, but I can't watch too much.
That's massive. It's un-Australian. It's un-Australian that.
Am I in the flog section?
You'll flog before that, let alone now. What a show, boys. Talk to Brandon Jack, son of Gary Jack, talking about his new book. We talk rugby union with Drew Mitchell. And of course, we're talking to Jason Smith, who has built such a culture there at the Boomers. He's the team manager. We talked to him before they hopefully get their first medal ever in the basketball.
Exactly. They're taking on Slovenia in the bronze medal game. So he's from the Team Australia apartment. So it's going to be amazing.
Oh, it's going to be great. Let's talk rugby league again now. And the NRL wingmen, the players with the most try assists. And if you go down the list, there's that sort of best combos, if you like, of Tom Trbojevic to Ruben Garrick. That's happened 9 times.
Yeah.
Cody Walker to Alex Johnson,
that
9 times.
Wow.
People talk of Dell in particular around Tommy Turbo this year. He's been outstanding. But Cody Walker, in terms of the stats, he has 28 now try assists after getting another one last night. Tommy Turbo, 19. Where do you see Cody Walker at the moment? Missed out on State of Origin.
Yeah.
Perhaps should have played game 3 in hindsight.
Yep.
Thoughts?
Yeah, I think, look, Cody Walker is a player that you can play at number 14, or, you know, you can play him, you can start him. And I just thought they could have went with the South pairing, but obviously because Whiten wasn't playing great at the time, I thought they could have left Whiten on the bench and they're gone with the South boys. But as we know, and I'm happy for Mitch Moses, I actually sent him a message. I was happy he got a start. I just think there was an opportunity there. Freddie liked him. But Cody Walker, he reminds me of a modern-day Cliffy Lyons.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite combination of these?
Cody Walker and Alex Johnston. Because Alex knows how to finish. Cody knows how to set him up. And even they just do stuff like, just ad-lib stuff and they go bang, you know, left foot kick off the right or whatever and they flick it out. Sometimes, how are you going to know what they're doing?
How do you build that synergy? Obviously, you played wing. You know.
Yeah, just at training, and then you trust the process. So, you know, when you're playing that offside touch and that, and you get a read and a feel for it, I played with a guy called Steve Renoff.
He went okay.
Yeah, I played outside him for a couple of years, and let me tell you, he carried me, but he taught me so much. Like, when he went on the outside, I knew to cut late back under because they're chasing hard to get the pearl, and that opened up back inside. I remember Matty Rogers was saying, he goes, mate, he schooled ET that day. And I said, mate, that's the way it is, you know, because Matty Rogers is a pretty fair player. So Matty was worrying about Pearl, and then I cut back under. So, yeah.
So, Dale, when you look at these combinations and Tommy to Garrick or Cody Walker to Alex Johnson, Cherry Evans to Saab, also Tom to Saab, they've got, you know, 7 and 6. Those sort of numbers, I was sitting there last night watching South Parramatta going, why can't they defend that left-hand attack of South Sydney? It happens every week. They set it up. They go there and they score in the corner. Doesn't matter who that winger is.
Mansour was great, wasn't he? Oh,
fantastic. Why can't you defend it when you know it's coming?
Because there's a trust issue there in their defence. Parramatta, they're not confident at the moment. Parramatta, when they were defending really well last year, you know, they were just, okay, hold, and then like Ferguson to jam or something. They're not on the same page. And South, no, repetition, mate, you know, because their defence hasn't been good. The opposite team, they'll get them. So,
they're not just doing it to Parra. They're doing it to every side, every week.
Because they trust what they're doing. So they've got a couple of options there. You know, if they get dummy in, they can just throw that little flat pass and that.
One combination that jumps out to me as well is Nico Hines and Josh Adokar. I mean, only come in for the back half of the year, Nico Hines.
It's ridiculous.
And the Sharkies have got a good one there, haven't they?
They've got a good one. But you know what's going to be interesting to see how he goes without that Melbourne Storm setup.
Yeah, so, and of course, Fitzy, we'll put a lot of Rooster stuff in, you'd imagine, as part of his head coaching philosophy.
But also, I think Josh Adokar, look, I'll be honest, I love watching this bloke play. I reckon by the time he finishes his career, he'll be talked about in the same sentence as Brett Morris and Eric Graith. I reckon he's that good of a finisher.
That's fantastic. Boys, it's been an amazing games for us. And I was just looking, and I have sort of gold medal bonuses by country. If you win a gold medal representing Singapore, you get $1 million.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's not just $1 million. It's $1 million and 3 and 27 cents. I don't know how they how worked they work that one out. Indonesia, 470 grand. Thailand, 420. Malaysia, 237. Australia, if you win a gold, and if you win multiple golds, it doesn't matter. You only get the one payment of 20 grand.
Yeah, but it opens up your sponsors as well. Like it's, it does, I mean, Ariana Titmus, for instance, has just set herself up for life now, and she's just phenomenal.
So. Yeah, Emma went okay as well.
Emma McKay,
wow. Is that brilliant? And I'll do my magic moment from Tokyo first is just that week in the pool. Not so much the success, but what I loved about the team. And I was there in 2012 poolside doing the commentary and talking to the swimmers after. There wasn't a great feeling amongst the team. There was a feeling of like them and us. I think now that team is together. I think they've got a wonderful culture, and I think they are in it together. And I think that's why we've had so much success. So for me, it was the overall sort of feeling or the vibe of the team, not just all the success we had.
For me, the athletics night where Rojas, the triple jumper, broke the world record, phenomenal. Then the Italians had their moment in the both the high jump and winning the 100 metres. I thought that was just one of the most electric times of the...
And what about the timing of the 100 metre racer runs through, wins gold, and it just at the same time as the high jumper from Italy, one of his best mates is standing there and he's just won gold and they have the biggest
split
hug.
Gold. It was a split gold.
Yeah, I love that split gold. Perfect sportsmanship. What about you, Del?
Yeah, look, man, I love the athletics and stuff, but for me... You know, you talk about countries who probably don't have the money that the other big countries do, you know?
It's not an even playing field,
no,
is
it's
it?
Not. No. But Fiji, I've seen them in Hong Kong. Fiji sevens, the men and the women. The women, they won silver, could have easily won the gold. They're a bit unlucky there. But the men, what I love about it, the religion, the culture, and just what it means to their country. And you see when they sung the hymns at the end and just what it means to them, the celebration, it just lifts the country up.
Speaking of the sevens, the Black Ferns, Ruby Tui, the interview that she did where it just showed the excitement of her competing, but you know the joy of being an Olympian, and obviously it was just awesome. I loved it.
Speaking of that, I think you guys have got Drew Mitchell on the show in the next week or two.
Exactly.
Speaking of Drew about French rugby, he said Samuel Rudder is the highest paid in French rugby. He's on about £900,000 or £1 million a season.
Wow, that's absolutely fantastic.
Our next guest is an Australian basketball legend who played at the elite level for 14 years in Australia. He was captain of the Sydney Kings during their three-peat NBL championships run, a grand final MVP, and played for the Boomers for over 10 years, including making it to the Sydney and Athens Olympics. And just when you thought he was done, he's taken the reins as team manager of the Boomers in Tokyo. Please welcome Dead Set legend, Jason Smith.
Yeah, how are you, Jace? It's good to chat to you over while you're over in Tokyo. How are you doing, mate?
Mate, I am super excited today. We're about to create history. It's unbelievable being on these guys.
So take us through, obviously, the game against Team USA. It was disappointing to not come away with the victory there. I mean, the guys got off to such a good start, but it just started to derail a little bit just around halftime, didn't it?
Yeah, and the crazy thing was I just remember sitting there watching, going, you know, that they haven't really made a run at us yet, and that was just before the half. And then Kevin Durant just stepped up and just made unbelievable play after play, and unfortunately that was the start of the decline for us in that second half.
Smithy, it's Wendell Saylor, mate. The Olympic Village in 2000, he was unbelievable. What's it like there with all the Aussies staying together in one block?
Yeah, it's really cool. I was, really unsure of what it was going to look like and what it was going to be like with the current environment that we're all in. But, to have all the athletes in one spot is really unusual. It's just, the vibe is incredible. And you go around, there's people with medals around, it's just the support that we're seeing is amazing too.
There's nothing quite like the Olympics, and this Olympics have been absolutely amazing for the Australian team. And we've ridden this whole journey with you guys, but no one better in terms of my eyes than Paddy Mills. He's been absolutely top draw off the court, on the court. His spirit has just been incredible, and we love him even more now. What's he like just to have around the group?
I tell you, he's a special individual. You know, I've been around some really good players in my time, but this guy, he has such a purpose in his life, not only for basketball, but for his people. He's such an ambassador for Australia all around the world, and globally loved, and rightly so. He's a special human being, and just really fortunate to be part of the Boomers.
Mate, you're right, because last year when the bushfires were down there at the south coast, he actually, on the back of himself and his group, He actually went down there because I think we were down there with the Dragons.
He walks the walks.
Yes,
he
does. Yeah. He does. So yeah, proud Indigenous man and very proud Australian.
Jason, you're a two-time Olympian yourself, and now seeing him in amongst this group now, what's the difference between this Boomer side under Brian Gorgian and previous years, and I guess the belief that they've got to deliver us a medal against Slovenia?
Yeah, look, I mean, I was in a very similar position in 2000. You know, we had the bronze medal game, and unfortunately didn't come away with the win. But I think that the difference is these guys have been, and there's a majority of these guys have been building for this for a long time. You know, these guys are third, fourth campaigns, majority of them. So, you know, they've been, they understand what's at stake. They're incredibly focused and motivated. And probably the depth of talent that we've got on the team now is just insane. Matisse Thybulle's come in. I mean, what an incredible athlete that guy is. But, you know, Josh Green, who hasn't seen a lot of minutes, but you look at the way that he can play, like he's an incredible athlete as well. But, you know, these guys that have come in, they're really, really focused. And hats off to Paddy, Joe, and Bainesy and Dally to be the core of this group that have really galvanised the team and set a purpose for them that everyone clearly understands and they've bought into the identity.
I can't help thinking if Ben Simmons was there in that group, it would have really helped the team, but also himself. But we won't go there, Smithy, because it's such a positive chat. And of course, you're going to make history, brother. So thank you so much for joining us from Tokyo. You must have lots on. We really appreciate you joining us on the Dead Set Legends.
No worries, and really appreciate from all the support we're getting from back home. I'm getting just countless emails and messages from you know, ex-Boomers and all people in the community. So thank you all for supporting the Boomers on this journey.
Mate, we absolutely awesome, love you, mate. The game's going on there in Tokyo, boys. Going back over the gold medal bonuses by country. Singapore, it's $1 million a gold medal. Hungary, 228,000. France, 88,000. Russia, 83,000. Brazil, 65, to name a few. Would you, boys, after playing at the highest level of your chosen sports, if you're an Olympic athlete, would you go and represent Australia at the Olympics if it was for free?
Yeah, I would, because it's something that, you know, it's a great honour to go to the Olympics. You work 4 years for that moment. And, you know, that medal, that's priceless. If you can get one, you know, bronze, silver or gold, it's priceless. But that, all that hard work, I suppose it's a sacrifice, but I would.
Okay, what about you, Jude?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the honour of pulling on the green and gold and just, you know, getting around the other athletes athletes' village and all that sort of stuff.
Mate, excuse me, Jude. We're focusing on the athletics and winning the gold, not partying in the Olympic Village.
That's the real Jude Bolton. Welcome, Jude Bolton.
Sorry. Hey, I call bullshit on you to say you represent for nothing.
But,
I would say that Dell would represent the twerking national competition because he's been twerking in here and it looks like two wombats down the back of his pants.
Oh, whoa. Look at those wallaby tracksuit pants.
Okay, so you would represent for nothing.
Absolutely.
Look, for someone who's represented Australia at a world championships myself in the dodgeball world championships in, what are you talking about?
In Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
I would also do it for nothing.
Yeah, of course you would.
I was just waiting for one of you guys to ask me.
You have to do it for nothing because they wouldn't pay you.
Australia only gets 20 grand compared to Singapore getting $1 million for a gold medal. Is that a little bit sort of, you know, mean of us?
I'm happy with that. Like 20 grand, that's
And if you win multiple, you only get the 20 grand. You only get it once. It's only a one-off payment.
Nah, that's terrible. Yeah, that's pretty ordinary.
Nah, it is what it is. I think there's sponsors, you know, coming out from everywhere to support our athletes who have just performed so well over there.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. And, of course, we've got one more day and then, of course, the closing ceremony tomorrow night. All right, let's move on because we have a special guest dropping by into the podcast.
If you asked our next guest what his favourite animal was, he'd probably say wallaby. And because he spent so much time playing for them, he's now suffering from green and gold colour blindness. Across his career, he's done it all, playing overseas for Toulon, as well as locally for the Brumbies, Reds and Western Force. He's got the record as Australia's highest try scorer in a World Cup, and he's mates with Wendell Saylor. So life hasn't all been easy. Please welcome Dead Set legend, Drew Mitchell.
Yeah, we've got Drew Mitchell on the line because Stan Sports will have the first Bledisloe Cup match live from Eden Park. Can we break the hoodoo there tonight at 5 p.m. Series-wise, boys, 48-12 Bledisloe Cup wins, New Zealand over Australia. So we're going to have to turn that around. And Drew, how are you, mate? What's it like getting excited for the call tonight?
Yeah, it's good. Game day, and it's my first day of work in about 3 weeks. So I get to leave the confines of my small little apartment here in the Queen's Park.
Drew, it's Jude. I mean, what can the Aussies take from that? I guess they're pretty battle-hardened after the series win against France. What can they take into this All Blacks side to I guess, break the hoodoo?
Yeah, look, I think for the boys to get a result tonight against the All Blacks, they need to be in the game and they need to show some grit. And they need to, you know, it's going to be an 80-minute performance, which sounds cliche, but there's been so many times where we've been in the fight with a few minutes to go and then the All Blacks show their class and come over the top of us. But from that French series, each of those results came down after the allotted 80-minute time set. So they've proven to themselves that they can stay in these fights. They can not get overwhelmed by the occasion and by the class of the opposition, and they can stick to their processes and get the results. So that's what's going to be needed tonight. And I think the other thing as well, they need to just take this All Blacks team into unknown territory, which is where they're chasing a game. The start is so important tonight for the Wallabies to get off to a good start, put this All Blacks team under pressure because they're just so comfortable leading the game from the beginning and then therefore leading the tempo and just dictating terms. So for them, the Wallabies tonight, they need to try and change that and make the All Blacks feel a little bit uncomfortable in terms of how they're playing the game.
Drew, you've been all over the world. You played rugby over in France. Obviously played for the Wallabies, you know, Reds, Force, everybody. Who's been your best roomie you've had? Matt Giteau, Adam Nelson Cooper.
Oh, come on.
Who's been your best roomie and why was I?
Look, this is a leading question. I can feel it. Look, Wendell was certainly the one that I learnt the most off. Probably more about what not to do than what to do. I don't know if necessarily it was world class preparation, getting up, getting on the punt, on the horses, getting steak sandwiches and Coca Cola for pre-game prep. That was Wendell's idea of going out there and feeling in best shape. I had to get rid of that just before a game and throw it up. So I don't know if that was necessarily the best thing to teach me, Wendell. But the other thing you did a lot was steal my allowance money.
I didn't steal. I borrowed it because we used to have a little.
You didn't have enough.
Yeah, we used to have betting games.
How much money did you grab out of the coffers of you?
Let me tell the story.
No, so we used to play FIFA of a night time, and Wendell would say, "Okay, I'll pay you for your allowance." And look, I rated myself at FIFA in those days, so. I go, yeah, right. But the £50 allowance for the week was big for me back in, you know, my first tour in 2004.
Yeah.
And Wendell, not so much. But so I beat him, and then he go, no, go again, double again, nothing. And then I beat him again. So I'm up 100 quid now. And then the moment Wendell would beat me, he goes, all right, the big man's going to go to bed. And I just had no choice with that. I just had to let him take my money or at least break even.
We know, mate.
And then I'd buy him breakfast, so it's a win-win.
Of course you do.
Drew, mate, just... you and that rock for breakfast.
Drew, just on the three Wallabies who were stood down prior to this opener against the All Blacks, how disruptive is that going to be to their preparation?
Yeah, look, it's just a little bit disappointing. I think, you know, it's especially at the moment with everything that's going on here and lockdowns right across the nation. I think it was just poor. Like, you've got to read the room a little bit, you know. Like, these guys are afforded the luxury to go across to New Zealand, live a pretty normal life over there in terms of the luxuries of getting out there and you know, being able to actually go out and have a drink. None of us can do that back here. And, you know, they're able to do something that they love and whilst we're all sort of locked up. So I think that it was poor form from them in terms of reading the room.
Yeah,
the other thing as well. Yeah, the other thing as well is, They had an agreed time to come home and call it a night, and they broke the team standards that Dave Rennie and the leadership group are trying to enforce. So, look, there's no complaints or damage or any incidents necessarily, but Dave Rennie's really trying to enforce a pretty strong culture within this group. And if you start letting things like that slide, then it sort of starts to snowball from there. So, you know, it's hats off to Dave Rennie and the crew to stand these guys down, but. Again, Marika's just signed a big deal to go over and play in Japan. He got red carded 5 minutes into the last performance, and now he's done
that. That was a joke.
Yeah,
exactly. It was a joke, but I think, yeah, again, just you've got to read the room a little bit and just understand that, you know, like there's other times to maybe go out and have a few more drinks.
I hate that. But hey, Drew, speaking of the Olympics and rugby, what about the culture of the Fijians? Like the women silver medal, the men's gold. It means so much, and we're in Hong Kong. Having a few drinks and talking about it. And, mate, how good is it for Fiji as a country, especially when Australia and New Zealand put so much money into it?
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. I think, you know, anyone that's gone over to visit the country, Fiji, know that rugby is just, you know, like it's almost a religion to them. It's in their blood. You go out there and, you know, they're playing with anything, any means possible that replicates a footy, and they get out there and play, and they just love it. And any of their football players that go offshore and really represent their nation, you know, whether it be in France, Australia, and New Zealand, anywhere else outside of Fiji, they they're just held in such high esteem, and they, you know, they send a lot of their money back to the islands as well to help and support their families and stuff like that. But you just see them all huddled around a TV set, any chance possible to get an eye on Fijiana, the girls' team, and the Flying Sevens Fijian boys. Like, it just means so much to them. And now Jerry Tuai, the only two-time gold medalist Fiji's history, because he obviously won in Rio as well. And now the Fijiana girls were really impressive. Yeah. I think they shocked a lot of people coming through, and not just through the pool stages, but then to go on and you know, seal that bronze medal was huge for them. And, yeah, I mean, we're going to see plenty more Semirad Radras flying around, and, you know, they're just, I don't know how they do it, but they just breed such great footy players. But the other thing as well is they're really respectful. They, you know, you see as soon as they won the gold medal, they huddle around, they're singing hymns and like they're crying, and it just means so much to them. So it's, the Fijian people, beautiful people, but they're beautiful rugby players as well.
Well, Drew, I know that lockdown's been hard for you. Obviously, you know, you live by yourself and you'd be missing your girlfriend, Charlotte. She's the boss of the relationship. So good luck, mate. And I'm looking forward to staying soon.
Mate, you know what? This lockdown's actually been good. It means I haven't had a visit from you for a little while.
Your couch buddy, Del.
Maybe you could ring Drew up and have that discussion. We're trying to do a radio show here.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Fair dinkum. Good on you, Drew. Enjoy the call tonight, mate. It is about to talk to Brandon Jack, boys. He's son of Gary Jack, brother of Kieran Jack, but much more than that, he's got a new book out called 28. And really, it's like a fly-on-the-wall view of professional sport, plus a lot of other stuff as well. It's really interesting. We've got him on the line, Jude.
Yeah, BJ, it's great to have you on, mate. Just tell us a little bit about the book, because this is a life that so many people in professional sport live, but they get to see, I guess, you know, the fringe side of football, which is so tough and to work through. Can you tell us a bit about the book?
Yeah, g'day, guys. Thanks for having me on. As you said, Judy, it's a book about life from the fringe of a footy club, which, you know, a lot of players have success, but a lot of players don't. And a footy club can look different when you're really worried about getting a text message about what meeting you're in, whether you're playing seniors or reserves, or, you know, you learn how to read the magnets on the whiteboard a bit differently when you're looking at the bench the whole time. And little things like that kind of make a difference. And I think people don't really know about that side of things, and it's an interesting story to share.
Mate, I remember a guy called Calvin Giles, the Olympic coach for England. He was at the Broncos, and he said to me, natural ability only gets you so far. You know, it's about mental and physical stuff, and then you sort of learn that. How have you found that?
I think, it's really important to motivate yourself and to work really hard to achieve things. And I think the lesson that I've kind of learned is I thought that I came away from the game not doing enough, and I continually beat myself up and saying, mate, you should have just done more. Why didn't you do more? And the fact is, I know I worked as hard as I could at that footy club, and I know there's people there who'd say I was one of the hardest trainers there were, but still, at the end of the day, sometimes the goal you have might not happen. And it's about coming to peace with the result. And that's been a long process for me. I've been out of the game for 4 years now, and coming to terms with, you know, the meaning of sports in my life and what I kind of value as a person was a really difficult thing to come to terms with.
What about the book itself? You know, when you sat down and that it's literally a blank page and you thought, you know what, I want to do something here that I'm proud of. Now that it's done and dusted, what are you most proud of? And the whole experience for you, has it been a good one?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, I want to write more books. I mean, I'm so sad that that's what I enjoy doing. I didn't want to write about football at all. The first version of the book was completely about the outside world. And I wrote, I'm not going to talk about football. But, you know, part of the process was realizing that there was something there to work through and something to share with people. You know, I'm getting messages now from former teammates who are saying they're getting so much from it, saying that their parents are reading it and getting an eye into like what life has been like for them as well, which they've never had before. So that those kind of messages are meaning a lot. And I'm just glad that, you know, I did set a goal and did it, and it's out there, and people can read it.
BJ, elite sport's such a bubble, and I guess you have this sole focus of, you know, trying to perform in that space. What sort of message do you send for young rugby league players or young AFL players who are stepping out on their journey to keep a balance in life? Because you obviously found your creative writing and other sort of, you know, art and stuff like that. How do you create that balance in your life?
It's so hard to do in that bubble, Jude, isn't it? Because your whole life revolves around this game, and it's your job and your passion. So it's kind of no escape from it. And I definitely fell into the trap of, you know, my whole life revolved around the game, but my worth as a person, like, I didn't care if I was a good or bad person. I cared if I was playing seniors or reserves. That was my judgment on myself. And I think that, you know, finding a line between relentlessly driving yourself and valuing being a good player. But then, you know, who you are as a partner, who you are as a brother, who you are as a person has nothing to do with that on-field success or failure.
I remember Wayne Bennett said to me in 2000 when we won the rugby league.
You're right, mate. It was against the Roosters. Yeah, I need to keep bringing that up. And you scored a try.
Day two, and a few of the boys are drinking. I was on the waters. And and I said, mate, Wayne, you must get an ego from all these players that you've coached. We've taken from young blokes, you know, Steve Renoff, Alan Langer. And he said, what my job as a coach and a mentor is what sort of blokes you become when you finish footy. And I think that's, you know, that's pretty on the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, head coaching is such a like such a difficult role, and to deal with people who are putting themselves on the edge. I mean, I at times was really upset with Horst, John Longmire, my coach, and I blamed him for a lot of things. But, you know, you come out and you get perspective and you realize that they do care about everyone there. And it's just like managing people is such a difficult task. And, man, I would never be able to do it, I don't think.
I tell you what, it's been wonderful talking to you. We could talk to you forever, mate. The book is called 28, the brother of Kieran Jack, the son of Gary Jack. But Brandon Jack, you are an absolute legend, mate. Love the vulnerability. Love the way that you're talking now. And I think that's going to do a lot more than you playing good games of footy. The book is called 28. Go and get it from all good bookstores. And we're now going to play a new game that we've played the last couple of weeks, which we've loved, which is called You Can't Ask That. And it's all about getting on the socials and asking us questions that you'd like to ask us. And some might be a little bit curvy, might be a little bit hairy, but we're going to ask them anyway. I've got one for both of you. Yeah. So, Jude, I think you can go first to give Dill a bit more time to think about it.
Yeah.
Is it your natural ability and talent or hard work that got you into your footy career?
I would say there was elements of having some natural talent. My mum and dad were both, you know, good sports people and that sort of stuff. My brothers were, but more about the drive and determination. I thought there was a lot of other players or at my age were better than me, but I had
Where were you drafted?
I went number eight. I went number eight to the Swans, but I was just really driven as a kid because I had a lot of chips on my shoulder from missing out on key teams and things like that.
Well, you still got a chip on your shoulder, mate, but anyway.
Always.
What about you, mate? You know all about chips. Yep. What natural ability for you or hard work?
A bit of both. I think there was always better players than me, but I think what sets you apart from everyone else is if you work harder, like even on Christmas Day when I used to fly back home, or I used to make sure I trained because I'd think other guys take a day off. So I'd fly back, train, and the old man go fishing with the old man because I think the more extras you do, I think the better you get. It's repetition under pressure.
Okay, so a bit of both in answer of that. What about another one here, boys? What are your thoughts on the Broncos and the Bulldogs players being trolled at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's pretty ordinary. You know, we like in the world today, we're going through a pandemic. Like, you've got to be a bit kinder. Just like when I'm walking along, I just try to smile and be friendly. Just gutless people trolling. People are doing it tough. Just honestly, just think about it. You know, if you don't even know the person. You know, heroes on social media, you wouldn't do it to their face. So don't do it in electronics.
Yeah, what well about said, you, mate. Well said. No, just I hate the online keyboard warriors and that sort of stuff. So, you know, you just got to be able to, you know, face up to them and just move on with it.
Okay, what about, you got a question over there, Del?
Yeah, of course. Gus is for you.
Okay.
Gus, have you walked your dog again since you filmed that TV commercial?
Wow.
No. The loser one.
Okay, yeah, no, I know what you mean. I actually took that dog, it was taken for a walk every single day this week because I am back doing a bit more training and stuff. I'm doing the intermittent fasting at the moment as well, only eating from 11 o'clock till 7 p.m., 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., and I'm walking every single morning.
When did you start that?
Yeah, I started.
Oh, sorry.
I see what you've done there.
Yeah. Righto, Del, this is for you. This is from Skullsy7 online. Del, what is your ultimate party trick?
That you can talk about. I can twerk and I can do the drop. I can't just really say the word, but yeah, I can just do the drop. You know,
it's like
drop it like it's hot.
Okay, a little booty shuffle there.
Yeah.
Okay, another one there, Jude.
Okay, Del again. Would you have survived if the NRL had a COVID bubble when you were playing,
mate? I was thinking about this. Everyone knows that answer. I got in trouble, obviously, at Wallabies camp, Waratahs camp, Queensland camp. We were supposed to be home by midnight, and then I snuck out after that with Chris Walker and a few others.
You're a caged lion, though, aren't you?
What makes you sneak out, though, when you know that the rule is midnight, and that midnight's late? Like, it's not like they said you can't go out.
So you know that naughty little boy that thinks, okay, don't do that? I think, you know what, I'm going to do it.
That's why I don't believe in curfews. Like, it's like, you know, you just give yourself enough rope.
Exactly.
Okay, well, just ask, what about you? Do you think you could cope in a lockdown?
I would be like a caged animal as well. I'd climb up the walls. So it'd be a tough scenario.
Mate, when I was in quarantine up in Queensland last year, they went from saying half an hour a day. By the end of the thing, I had a PE group, and we're going for an hour, hour and a half. People go, you're supposed to be in lockdown. But I buttered the cops up, so they love the big deal.
Yeah, I understand. What about this, boys? What would your NRL 4x100 metre team be? I have Turbo, Saab, Coates and Fox. Harry from the Corso is the sub.
I'd have Hamaso, Addo Carr, Saab, and then I'd go Pappenhausen. Bang.
Pappenhausen?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Mate, okay. Pappenhausen is quick.
He had Turbo, Saab, Coates, and the Fox.
That's damn good four. Yeah. That is good four.
Mine would beat that one.
You reckon your team would beat that one? Akey dakes. Well, of course, we've got
Alex Johnson in there, maybe.
Ooh. Oh, Alex Johnson's so good as well.
And that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to hear us live, you can catch us every Saturday morning on 104.9 Triple M. We'll be back next week, of course. And thanks for listening to us on the Listener app.